Good morning. Hi, Barb.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you today?
Terrific. Thanks.
Good.
Dean, I like your 4th of July celebration flag. Can Dean hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Yep.
All right.
There you go.
Get that big microphone working.
Right. Radio announcer.
There's a cough or a mute button on it, so I had it on.
That's funny. Yeah. You can be Rush Limbaugh now.
They do sell gold ones. They got all kinds of colors. The gold ones were all sold out.
Of course.
Yeah. My dad was born on 4th of July. He turned 79.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
And I have a July birthday. I love my country, so it's my favorite month.
Well, that's wonderful. I was a history and political science major, so clearly I'm a big fan. I watched Hamilton and got a kick out of that. Thought it was fun and funny and well done.
Yeah.
And great to know that at least a portion of our country will know something about our history.
Yeah.
You know, however they get it, I don't care how it gets in their heads, but just understanding the sacrifice that these guys made.
Yeah, I was going, 3 or 4 years ago, I took a chaperone, a group of kids at our church for a missions trip in Brooklyn. And, one afternoon we went into Lower Manhattan and was walking around Wall Street, and we walked by Alexander Hamilton's grave. And I go, oh my gosh, do you know who this is? And none of the kids had a clue who Hamilton was. And, but yeah, that's a great, have you seen the play in person?
No, I just saw it on TV over the weekend. It was the first time it was on Apple TV, and so I got the chance to see it. But no, I would have loved to have seen it in person.
Yeah,
did we you saw get it you saw it in Chicago? Nice job.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Bradley?
Good morning, all.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, good. Happy post-4th of July.
Thank you. I just heard you talking about Hamilton. We had the privilege of seeing it in New York.
Oh, you guys are killing me. That's great. That's great. Must have been kind of almost a shock how cool it was.
Well, it was, nobody had really told me very much about it, so it was different than what I expected, but, you know, the talent is astronomical, so it was really fun to watch.
Yeah, yeah, the talent. You're not ready for hip-hop, but it's like, wow, just the talent and the skills and the dancing and the just the fun of it. It makes it come alive. And, of course, King George was awesome as usual. They say he's always the hit of the show. Anyway. So back to our, what's on your mind this morning before we get into our review of chapter 4?
Nothing for me.
I'm getting this fear of inflexibility, like the rest of my life is mapped out.
It's true.
You know, there's a certain degree of spontaneity that my wife and I have to pick up. You know, a couple, last year, was it? 2 years ago, friends invited us to their condo down in Naples on spring break. So literally with 3 days notice, we went, you know. Can I still do that, Rob?
No. I'm sorry. You're a professional now. sure you can. You just take your folders with you and you make your calls while you're in Naples. It's up to you. I mean, you can say you had an emergency and cancel your calls, or you can make them, or you can, I mean, my advisors out in Colorado, you know, hunkered down, having a blast, you know, going out on the lake and fishing, and she loves, you know, she's in Colorado. She makes her calls. And, so can you do it? Sure. You can do it from Naples. You just have to prepare, I think, is the point. I don't think, you know, with Corona, we found that you can run your business from anywhere. You just have to be organized. And, so I think, I don't think it hurts productivity at all. I think productivity is actually going to go, I think productivity is much higher under Corona than it is when you're sitting in the office. You don't have each other to hand a folder to. You don't have the spontaneity of going to see somebody but when it comes to concentration and focus and being uninterrupted, I bet Barb, you guys, Courtney, you guys are getting more work done. Nobody's coming over and saying, oh, here, do this, do this, do this, you know, and interrupting you and making, I mean, I think one of the biggest annoyances that I ever found was when I interrupted my assistant. And so we had a scheduled appointment every day. She would come into my office at 9 o'clock and we'd go through the mail and we'd go through stuff and I'd sign things and then she'd leave. And if I had completed tasks, they'd go in my out basket. She'd come in periodically, pick up things out of my out basket. And then at the end of the day, we'd meet for a few minutes and go through anything else that needed to be signed or anything else that needed to be done. And her productivity was terrific. Do you remember Mary Ann Dean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She was, you know, her biggest challenge was finding me, you know, in the world of pre-Corona, I was always gone or wandering the office, you know, chatting with people. So,
I never interrupt Courtney though. So that's,
never.
She's muted.
Taking the fifth.
Yeah.
But no, you will, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, you know, when you're on vacation, you can be on vacation because you know that every client is being called because you did it. You know, you can either call them before you go on vacation or when you get back or have somebody else call them. But you know, every client's getting called every month. And so you don't have that, you're not walking around with this massive guilt. Like, who did I not call this month? Or I haven't called that guy for 4 months and I don't really want to call him, but I have to call him sometime, but I'll put it off for another month. Yeah. So look, you know, and anything else other than, feeling a little bit constrained. How are the calls going to your clients with the good news?
Well, I would say, I mean, the vast majority of my clients are loving the idea. I'm getting, there seems to be a level of enthusiasm, a genuine enthusiasm. I've still only had the one client who said, no way are we talking 12 times a month, but everybody else has seemed very, very receptive to it.
Yeah, that's a good sign, Brad. That means they like you, trust you, and want more of your time. I mean, that's a very good sign. And in the beginning, they'll take more time. You'll be surprised how much they want to talk. But that will decrease over time when they're assured that they're going to talk to you again the next month. And then they'll control themselves a little better. But it's, you know, they have separation anxiety. So they'll want to talk for an hour the first week, you know, the first time you call. But don't panic, because it gets better. And, you know, it can be a 10-minute call. It can be a 20-minute call, because they know you're going to call next month. And they get busy too, Dean. That's the other thing. You think, wow, this is going to be, you know, so constraining. And then people will say, look, I'm on vacation. I want to cancel this month. Just talk to me next month. And you're like, yay. So that's okay, by the way. You know, they can cancel, and you don't need to talk to them unless they have something that they need, unless it's something you need to talk to them about. And then you just call them and say, hey, I need to get this taken care of, you know, and they go, fine, good, done. So there's a practical side of this that, you know, people say to me, what happens, you know, if I have to cancel, or what happens if they have to cancel? I say, you either make it up because you've got a lot to cover, or you just push it to next month. So don't panic over the sense of, oh my Lord, you know, this is going to be really tough getting everybody in every month. Cause there'll be, you know, life shows up and people have issues, and, you know, they're going in the hospital or this or that. And I just, you know, so if you get 10 of the 12 done, that's terrific. I would say on average, you'll probably be nine will get done of the 12, unless it's a really big account where they've got, you know, you got somebody with more than 10 million, you'll probably do 12. You might do 14, you know, but with a guy with a million, you know, nine, practically speaking, you'll end up with, you know, between you having to go somewhere and them having to go somewhere, you'll end up with nine. That doesn't mean you're not conscientious about it. I mean, my most conscientious people tell me that they really work at it, and they get about 9 and 10. They don't get 12. So. Okay. That make you feel better?
Sorta.
Well, all right. Yeah. I want to hear from Yankee Dandy Boy over there in Illinois.
We got a Zoom attack here. We got a house full.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. What lesson four was, we worked on the, roles and responsibilities, which was lesson three. We kind of got that in last week. We also had Jim Lehrer's book, The Power of Full Engagement, which talked a lot about ideal performance state is created by ideal recovery state. And I'd just like to get your feedback on that. And, you know, anybody, did that resonate with anyone? Are you making any changes to your rituals to, you know, ideal performance state is created by ideal recovery state. Ideal recovery state is proper amount of sleep, exercise, and diet. 8 hours sleep, you know, smaller meals, more meals, keeping your glycemic index up, hydrating properly, drinking enough water, making sure that you are exercising 1 hour of vigorous exercise a day. Sorry, that's what it really takes, but you can do less. But the 1 hour is optimum for longevity and keeping your health up. It also helps you with your ability to perform at an ideal state, able to concentrate longer, have better longer, your ability to concentrate for longer periods of time is enhanced by your ability to exercise and become stronger physically and mentally. So proper sleep, exercise, and diet. Any comments, questions?
None from this end.
Okay, anybody making any changes? Anybody learn anything?
I drink a lot of water anyway, but sometimes I'll find the busier I get, the more I forget to drink water. So I actually bought a pitcher and I set it out on the counter with lemons. It's real pretty. And every time I walk by it, I think I need to drink more water. So I did do that.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. The average person is dehydrated and sleep deprived.
Yeah.
For me, go ahead, Dean.
Go ahead, Brad. That's right.
The only thing I was going to say was that for me, exercise in the summertime is pretty easy. I really enjoy riding the bike. And so I try to ride 50 miles a week. In fact, I just got back from a ride and am hydrating. So as a rule, 8 hours a night. 7 to 8 hours a night is not a problem for me for sleep. I will confess that the diet could use a little bit of adjustment, but other than that, pretty good.
My routine used to be every single lunch hour, and my health club shut down. And my two days a week, I play basketball with a bunch of old timers. And of course, we haven't been able to do that now since March. So, luckily we have an acreage here and I'm always active. In fact, I'm really tired at the end of the day after working in the yard, and we have some properties we've been working on also, but I'm looking forward to getting back. Tried Orange Theory with Barb kind of turned me on to that, but that's for the younger kids. At least in Champaign. It was me and a bunch of sorority girls, so I'm not doing that again. I mean, literally, that's what it was. But, I love working out. And I need about 9 hours sleep, actually. I rarely get that, but that's my goal.
It's good. It's great. It's great. If you like it, it's so much easier than if it's torture. Some people, it's really painful to do it. They do it anyway. But for me, I've always loved it. It's the best part of the day. I watch the sunrise. I bike like you, Brad, about 50 miles a week. And then, with my granddaughter here for 3 weeks, we've been out on the kayaks almost every day and biking and playing and swimming. And so it's been fun. We're hunkered down, but we have our own little playground here. So it's pretty fun. So yeah, that's been good. Dean said his dad is what, 79, did you say? Just had his birthday?
Yeah, 4th of July, 79.
Neat. And that's when you sort of test, has the routine worked, right? I mean, and if he's going hard and doing great at 79, then probably the rituals have been good for him. And that's what you hope. That's what we all hope for. Not that we're not just going for longevity. We're going for quality of experience along the way, quality of life. And if you feel good and you're strong and something bad happens to you, you have the much better chance of surviving it than if you're not in good shape when you start into these things. So having, being 74 now, which I feel like that was, I'm talking about somebody else, how can I be 74? That's crazy. But somehow it catches up to you And all of a sudden you're that age and you're like, okay, can you still do all this stuff? Oh yeah, I do everything. So I'm blessed that way. So I'm a huge believer in this, and it's worked for me my whole life. Dean knows that I have been a big proponent of it throughout my career, and try to be a good example and try and encourage other people. So it's not just something, and don't be afraid to encourage your clients to read Jim Lehrer's book and to, this is where you can be an influence. You know, you're a center of influence. You're an influencer. So you can do this. You can be an example. You can be a person that encourages others. You can tell them what you know and why it makes sense, and that their life will be better if they listen. So when they retire, send them the book, Younger Next Year. It's a great book. It was written by a psychologist and a doctor, and it's about retirement and the stress of you go through in the first year of retirement, and how do you get through it, and what should your routine be? So Younger Next Year, it's a great present to send to everybody when they retire, male, female, everything. And then if they enjoy it and they like it, then send them Jim Lehrer's book, Powerful Engagement. Because people want to be engaged when they retire. They don't want to be, quote, retired. You know, that's a wrong word. They want to be on to the next, you know, I call it graduation. You know, I tell people I graduated from Merrill Lynch in 2006. And it's a better term than I retired. I didn't retire. I didn't go backwards. I went forward. And that was my graduation. I learned everything I could from them. I graduated and I moved on to my next adventure, which really was 10 years of hiking all over the world and exploring and starting Supernova. And, you know, and this is, but I think you can be a huge help to somebody, because male, female, especially the higher their position, the more authority they had, the more responsibility they have at retirement, the more lost they're going to be, because they're, you know, you go from the phone ringing every minute of every day to it never ringing. And nobody caring about you anymore. Nobody cares. You're retired. Goodbye. So I think it's a big red letter day of transition that I don't think that we understand enough until we go through it. I certainly didn't. So I think you can have accurate empathy by projecting yourself into that position, feeling it a little bit, and then really listening to them when they're retiring and encouraging them. You know, there's a lot of books on it. The Second Half is another book. But I think Younger Next Year is at least a good starter for them. And they need a lot of attention when they first retire. They need somebody to talk to. And they're not going to go to a psychiatrist. And they probably need one. So you can be a big help.
Rob, you probably know an industry speaker by the name of Mitch Anthony. He has a great book that is good to send out a couple of years before retirement. It's called The New Retirementality. And the crux of the book is that it's important not to retire from something, but to retire to something. And I have found it to be really helpful to clients as they begin to think about retirement.
I think that's great. Congratulations. I mean, that, it's just, it's such a, you know, we talk about PSD, you know, post-traumatic syndrome, and how people go through that after a war or traumatic experience in their life. Well, for a lot of people, retirement is a traumatic experience, which causes a bit of PTSD. But you're right. If, you know, most people do not prepare for retirement. All of a sudden they're in it and they're unequipped to deal with it. So, congratulations for that. I think it's very good of you. And that's where this concept of being their life coach comes in. So important. Different, you know, just a different perception of who we are and what our role is. But when there is no one that, frankly, other than their family, that cares about them in a professional way, like you have the potential to care about them. Their CPA certainly isn't going to. Their attorney isn't. You know, you think maybe their doctor is, but unless they have a concierge physician that has time. And I had a concierge physician, and he was great about the doctor part of it, but he was no help anywhere else. So there's nobody, literally nobody, except for their friends and maybe their minister that cares about them like you potentially can. And it doesn't take a lot. It just takes a little bit of outreach periodically with a listening mentality to give them the opportunity to adjust better to their retirement. And they will listen. They will, and they'll appreciate it forever. Because it's just getting through that first year. It's just really hard. Just ask some of the, you know, spouses of people that retire. They'll tell you. It was a year of change. So, Dean, how about you? Have you found that?
The question is?
What have you found with people retiring? Do you think they retire, is it a smooth transition, or have you noticed kind of a rough transition for some, or how have you been able to help them get through that?
I think it's both. I've been, I try to have discussions. I mean, there's so much, there's just been an explosion of, you know, retirement material out there, and get to people, really get people thinking about that next chapter or what you retire to or whatever the verbiage is. I do need to be more systematized. Like, here's my top three books you should read, that type of thing. Halftime is another one.
Yep.
You're familiar with Halftime Institute.
Yep.
I've given that book out to quite a few people. But I always encourage people, you know, do not sit home, disengage, and watch Fox News all day. You will become a very fat, unhappy person, you know. Please tell me, I literally say that. Please tell me you're not going to do that, you know. Watch a half hour of Hannity and you've got all the right wing stuff you need, you know, that's what you got to have, but promise me you're going to do something, you know, because I've seen people literally, you know, we had Kraft is a big, employer there in Champaign, second largest food tonnage producer in the world. I guess there's one other plant in Paris that does more. But I literally have seen people, you know, go to work there and retire and sit home, watch Fox News, and they become angry and they have severe health problems.
Right.
So, you know, I just tell them, please tell me you're not going to do that. You know, here's what we found. People are happiest when they're engaged doing something.
Right. Yeah. You gotta be. No, yeah. You're absolutely correct. And, you know, angry old men, you know, angry, whatever.
And typically when not to get too deep in the weeds, but where I typically bring that up is in the financial planning process. You know, we're talking about future income, retirement or, you know, pension, social security. And I say, you know, employment, and they're looking at me like, oh, no, I'm not working. I go, well, trust me, you're probably going to, you know, I had a retired school superintendent that loved to mow at a golf course. He'd get up at 5 o'clock every day and ride a lawnmower for 4 or 5 hours. That's not my idea, but he just loved it, you know. So please tell me you're going to do something. And that's a good time to talk about volunteering also.
Right. And some people fail some people fail retirement, quote, you know, they have to go back to work. Some people love volunteering and some people hate it. And if you hate it, go get a job, you know, go work.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to work with Chuck Colson. I don't know if you remember Chuck Colson.
Oh yeah, sure.
He was in your neighborhood. And in 2010, I went through a years long, it was called Centurions with him, but he was always railing on, not you, Rob, but people who go down to Naples in the gated community. And about the only thing they have to look forward to is 4:30 happy hour every day, you know?
Right.
And he was on airplanes, traveling, doing a lot of work. And that was 2010. So that's what kind of when it really hit me that, you know, here Chuck was in his
He worked with prisons, didn't he?
He founded Prison Fellowship Ministry.
Right.
He was Nixon's hatchet man who went to jail for Watergate. Yeah. So he's been my inspiration on, you know, what really is possible. Now I don't have the skill of Chuck Colson, but it was pretty inspirational to hear him say, don't think you just want to go to a gated community and play pickleball every day and go to happy hours. Doesn't work that way. Right. Shouldn't work that way.
Well, why do you think I've been doing this for 12 years? It isn't a financial decision. I mean, I retired with everything I needed. I've been giving away the money ever since. You know, I've never taken a salary. I give away my money. I've given away more money than I retired with, which is really kind of fun, right? Think about that, right? Yeah. Of course, life has been generous to me. And, you know, the more I give, it seems like the more I get. And it just seems to come back. I scare myself and give away a big chunk and then go, and then it comes back, you know, multiple. So it's been
something pretty biblical about that, by the way.
I know. Isn't it true? It's just so wonderful. And my brother does the opposite. And it's like, he worries about everything and hoards his money. And anyway, live the generous life. And, you know, it's a happy life. I just think it's terrific. So you try and do your best because you got one shot at this. And so, but I think you all, you know, we're looking for that cause, right? That big cause that we can have a huge impact, the Chuck Colson. You guys have the same thing, just like I do. You have the ability to change lives dramatically, one at a time, with your clients, who then, every client then affects, you know, the average person knows 300 people. So how do you know that? How many people go to a funeral, right? So think about it. You impact somebody in a dramatic way, like giving them a more, you know, just a more rich life when they retire. And then they do it and prepare their children and their brothers and sisters and cousins and because of what they know and what they learn from you. So we are teachers and coaches. And that's a great calling and can make a huge difference in your communities. So get them to volunteer. Not everybody wants to, but you can get them to volunteer and to be active in their communities and give back like we all try to do. So anyway, that's chapter 4. Chapter 5 was the flow of the business, organization. This is, you know, we've talked about organization since week 1, but we're getting into the organization structure, process, the agenda, the executive summary, and why that's important. So I want to encourage you to do that. I would say 3/4 of the teams do it now, but I'll coach a team that I haven't coached for a while. They'll say, "Oh, we need you again." And I'll go back and coach them for the second time. And they'll say, "Yeah, we're doing the agenda, but we're not doing the executive summary." And I'll say, "Why?" And they'll say, "Well, I don't know." And I'll say, "Do you understand the value of it?" And they'll go, "No, tell me again." The process we create is a holistic process that relieves the client of anxiety. What are we going to talk about? And then what did we talk about? What did we decide to do? Do I have to remember that, or are you going to help me remember that? So just think of the process as a way of helping people to reduce their stress and their anxiety. So you accepting a little more responsibility reduces your client's stress dramatically. So we go through the agenda and then the executive summary. Comments on that? Does that seem reasonable, or is that, do we need to think about that or talk about it?
Well, I don't need to think about it, Rob. I have done both an agenda and executive summary for my ultra high net worth clients. I mean, I only have two, but they seem to really appreciate it. But the difference between what I have been doing and what you're describing is, of course, now that we're going to a 12-4-2 model, the agendas and the executive summaries will be a lot, more compact. So I like the idea. I think we'll be able to do it for, all clients who are going to be on 12-4-2. I think it's important. So, yeah, I like the idea. I've just never done it for other than maybe two or three people.
Terrific. Dean, how about you?
Pretty much the same as Brad. There's two or three that I do it for because I know how meticulous they are, but there's no doubt I should be doing it for everybody, and to systematize it more is going to help a lot. And I also think for regulation BI and all these things coming at us, my goodness, we're going to have to document.
Yep. So yes, Supernova takes care of regulation BI. You don't think really, literally, you don't need to do anything else. So congratulations. Good. I went through when you talk about the craft relationship, Dean, I mean, there's a niche, right? And within that niche, you probably have a center of influence, somebody that likes you, trusts you, and sends you people that are retiring from craft. That's a great model. In Indianapolis, we have Lily, and Brad, you probably have a center of influence or several centers of influence inside Lily that send you people that are thinking about retiring. What I'd like to do is formalize that a little bit more. So I'd like you to think about that. And who are those people? And what do we do? And what can we do for them to make them feel special? And as we learned in chapter 4, it's not your time that they want, it's your energy. So if you're going to give them the gift of your energy, what are you going to do in terms of making it of value for them? So you block out time for them, but you also block out, make it personal, make it something special for them. So you have to know what their interests are and so forth. You need to know who they are in a deeper way than maybe even your clients. And you can make it special for them so that they will value your relationship even more. If they're sending you introductions, that's a center of influence, sending you introductions without you asking. When you build a deeper relationship, they will send you more. Here's what happens. Everybody says, I say to them, where do you get your clients? They'll always say the same thing. Where do you get your new clients? From my clients. Who sends you those? Oh, just everybody. Well, when we do the homework, we realize that it isn't everybody.
Why?
It's the 80-20 rule. 20% of our clients send us 80% of our introductions. But we don't spend 80% of our time working on those 20%. In fact, oftentimes we don't give them any more attention than we give our regular clients. My suggestion is that we build a folder for them as part of that niche. So you build a folder that says craft, and inside is your center of influence or multiple centers of influence. And what you do is you make a special effort to reach out to them on a regular basis to tell them how much you value them and how much you appreciate them beyond the fact that they're a client. So I suggest that you make a folder, and that you, that's part of your prospecting, is that that folder comes up once a month, that you schedule a 12-4-2 with them, and that you create an agenda and an executive summary and keep track of all the people that they've referred you to, and then take personal effort to thank them regularly for those introductions. And guess what? You'll get more. Okay? Make sense?
Yep.
It does.
Yeah. So that's your homework. Let's get those niches identified, in COVID world, you're not building folders, but at least build a virtual folder for them. Figure out who they are, and then let's talk about next week what we can do to make them feel special. All right. Good, good. Any questions on week 5?
Not for me.
Dean?
No, we're good.
Good. Ladies? Good?
I'm good.
Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
All right.
Happy Pulse 4th. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.